Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
It's hard to say that something is legitimate when a whole portion of the country can't vote and doesn't vote.
When you go to the polls on November 7th, how confident are you that your vote will be counted? It's our 2006 election series, 30 issues in 30 days, issue 19. Will your vote be counted? It's also, by the way, our fall membership drive. So good morning, everyone. And if you value series like 30 issues in 30 days, we hope that sometime this hour you will cast your vote to keep WNYC alive and well. Please do it at WNYC.org or call 1-888-376-WNYC this hour. Thanks so much. But will your vote in the elections be counted? This was not a headline issue just a few years ago, but now all I need to say is Florida 2000 or Ohio 2004 or Diebold or Kenneth Blackwell or paper ballot backup, and everyone is instantly engaged and often polarized. I'd even say we probably get more requests for more coverage of this issue than any other in the last 2 years. Just this morning, as it turns out, the New York Times has a front page story headlined "New Laws and Machines May Spell Voting Woes." It had to do largely with defective electronic voting machines and new voter identification laws in various states. My first guests on this issue are Michael Waldman, executive director of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, a former aide to President Clinton. Waldman's group recently won lawsuits against both Florida and Ohio, blocking new laws that they say would have resulted in vote suppression. And also with us, with his story of trying to vote and trying to help people vote in Ohio in 2004, is Tony Miner, a pastor in Cleveland for the Community of Faith Church, who is still telling stories of Election Day 2004. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning.
Reverend Miner, tell us your story. What was Election Day 2004 like for you?
Well, it was chaotic. You know, as a pastor, I pastor a low-income area in Cleveland where we have members spread out across town, and I was working with the People for the American Way doing election protection. And we just found, starting at 7 o'clock in the morning, there were long lines everywhere. People were coming out of the polls complaining. They had poll workers who were not trained. And it just created an environment of distrust and an environment of apathy about voting that continued into 2006 with these new voter laws that was proposed by the state of Ohio. We're hoping and with not feeling good about it, we're hoping that this coming election would be much more manageable, but we have serious problems in Ohio, and people are not sure if their vote is going to count.
You say you're not so confident about it. What are you worried will happen on November 7th this year?
Well, I'm really worried that the folks at the polls are not trained, that they will not have the techs that can respond to problems with the computers. I'm concerned about long lines. You know, we've done a lot of protesting, a lot of advocacy to make sure that we have competent staff and that the community is certainly assured and truly understand what they must do to vote properly. The biggest concern for us is that we're into a year now where people have to show ID. And as I talk to people at our church and around the community, people are clueless as to what exactly they should be, what type of government ID. The whole question, if you don't have an ID, you can bring a utility bill. A lot of poor and low-income folks, some just don't have, they don't have those things in their name. So those are the types of things that we are definitely concerned about. We're out in the streets, passing out materials, helping people understand what the new rules are and what they must do on their end to make sure that they are allowed to vote.
Before you go, and we talk to Michael Waldman to put this in national context, do you think that your flock is being targeted by this new law by virtue of being poor, by virtue of being in Cleveland, by virtue of being largely black, by virtue of being largely Democrat?
Okay, is that for me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I would definitely think so. I mean, I don't really want to get into the partisan aspect of it, but certainly most of the people in my congregation and the areas that I serve historically have voted in a progressive way. I think that the evidence shows that most of the new laws, most of the things that are occurring in communities, especially communities of color, that definitely vote for progressive candidates. Progressive candidates in most cases, not all, in most cases means candidates who are a Democrat. So we're really fighting that. You know, this is 2006. It's the same type of stuff that was being fought in the 1950s, Dr. King faced, and it's the same thing. It's a little bit more covert, but we still have to fight the forces that do not want the masses of Americans to practice democracy, though we're fighting for it in Iraq.
Reverend Dr. Tony Miner, pastor for the Community of Faith Church in Cleveland, thank you very much for joining us. Good luck on Election Day.
Thank you very much.
And with us, too, Michael Waldman, the executive director of the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU Law School. Is that story typical of any kind of pattern, in your opinion?
Well, what Pastor Miner is talking about, of course, was far too typical all across Ohio, especially in 2004, where you had long lines, especially in poor neighborhoods, many more voting machines in some parts of the state than in other parts of the state. But what he's really talking about is not just something particular to Ohio or to any one state, but a real challenge to democracy all across the country. Voting is at the heart of democracy, and as we're starting to see with the election looming, there's really a voting crisis that has kind of crept upon us. There are many, many changes in the way people are voting that are going to come into place for the first time in 2006.
And we'll get into some of them, but just one thing on Reverend Miner's story and his partisan concerns. Aren't the county election officials Democrats, by and large, in Cleveland, and so wouldn't they be more responsible than the Republican state officials?
You've got a situation where these are expensive for local areas, and the local areas that have the least money are the ones that are the most overwhelmed. And a lot of this stuff is statewide, although part of the problem is you've got 13,000 separate jurisdictions all over the country running elections. Leaving for others the partisan question, there's no question that the people who tend to get affected by these voter suppression tactics or problems tend to be poorer, younger, or older. Basically, the people who have the hardest time, as is, getting their voices heard.
We'll also be joined in a few minutes by one of the members of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, who has a very different view of this as we continue with Issue 19 and our 30 Issues in 30 Days 2006 election series. Issue 19, will your vote be counted? But Michael Waldman, you were going to tell us what's new in 2006 that has you concerned.
Well, there's quite a few things that are new. After Florida, there was a national voter law, the federal Help America Vote Act, that was passed, and it went into effect. It started to really take hold in January of this year. So a lot of things are being done differently. First off, there are going to be new electronic voting machine systems used in 80% of voters are going to be using these new electronic systems, and a lot of them are for the very first time. You've got new rules about how people get on the voter registration rolls, ways that states are doing it will silently disenfranchise potentially hundreds of thousands of people who are going to show up on Election Day eligible to vote, thinking they're going to vote, and discover, oh no, you've been kicked off the rolls. And then, as the pastor talked about, there are new draconian and unfair, in our view, requirements to show voter identification, which again are new, and where many people...
In how many states?
Over a dozen states.
Really? Why is all this happening now? Why is there so much change in this direction after Florida and Ohio?
Well, you would think that the change, of course, ought to be in the other direction. And I'll give you an example. In Florida and Ohio, both the lawsuits you mentioned, In 2004, one of the positive developments was there was an upsurge in people voting. There were 50 million new registrants around the country, and at least 10 million of those folks were registered by large nonprofit groups who registered people. You'd think this would be a good thing that people would want to encourage. Instead, the state of Florida and Ohio treated this as a terrible social problem that needed to be cracked down on, and they passed really sort of Spanish Inquisition-style laws that practically shut down voter registration in many instances. They said that in Florida, for example, if you had a mistake on turning in a voter form, you were personally fined $5,000.
Whoa.
And
the group, not the individual voter.
No, the individual
really?
Person doing the registering of the voters.
Doing the registering of the
so,
voters.
So, you know, 11 of those mistakes, you could register hundreds of thousands of people. It's more than the budget of the League of Women Voters of Florida. And, in fact, the League, which is not exactly a subversive, organization, shut down its voter registration activities in Florida for the first time in 70 years. We represented them in a lawsuit, and the judge found it not only to be bad policy, not only to be a bad idea, but illegal, undemocratic. And that's so that but,
so that's
but it was
the
too law, late.
That's the lawsuit you won in Florida.
That's what we won in Florida. There was a similar thing in Ohio, where Ohio, the creativity of the efforts to shut down voter registration were quite impressive. The individual people doing the registering of voters have to personally take the forms in rather than turning them over to the nonprofit group they're working with or the church. And they have to register in advance with the Secretary of State of Ohio, who happens to be the Republican candidate for governor. And they have to take a training, which is only available online.
In fact, I was reading about this weird situation where under Ohio law, the Secretary of State, who, as you say, happens to be the Republican candidate for governor, Kenneth Blackwell, has the official power to knock his opponent off the ballot.
If he
deems his, you know, his signatures or something like that to be illegal.
I know this just from reading it in the paper that the his opponent was challenged by the local Republicans in one county. The local county board deadlocked on party lines, and it has apparently gone up to Blackwell, and he has recused himself. He's not going to rule on it, but his deputy will rule on it. So putting that aside, that would be a bit tough to pull off under any circumstances. These new anti-voter registration laws, they're unconstitutional, but they've been put into place, and we've been able to get them suspended in a lot of places, but there are tens or hundreds of thousands of people who otherwise would have registered to vote this time, who just won't.
You come from the Democratic Party. You worked in the Clinton White House. We'll have a conservative from the Wall Street Journal editorial board joining you shortly. And we know voter suppression and voter fraud have gone both ways in American history. But that all being said, do you think voter suppression and intimidation tactics are more a Republican strategy than a Democratic one in 2006?
Well, I'm in a nonpartisan organization now, and so I have to say that I leave those judgments to others. Unfortunately, you look at a place like Florida, you look at a place like Ohio, there are other states where Democrats have been doing the same thing, but it is definitely the case that the people who are affected by all this tend to be people of color, poorer people, older people and younger people, and you have to ask what the motives are, why these kinds of moves are happening now, why suddenly there's a massive witch hunt for voter fraud when there's very little evidence of any significant voter fraud problem. This ought to be an issue that rises above this. Our mission, as far as I'm concerned, has to be to try to put democracy back at the center of American politics again. And we have had some success, especially on the electronic voting machines, in working with people from both parties, because there's as many Democratic hackers out there as there are Republican hackers.
We will continue with Michael Waldman, Executive Director of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU. And we will also be joined by Robert Pollack from the Wall Street Journal editorial board as we continue with our 2006 election series, 30 issues in 30 days, issue 19, Will Your Vote Be Counted? Stay tuned.
We have a whole history of voter suppression in the state, and we are concerned, and we'll have a very large legal team present on that day to ensure that every voter has the right to vote and will vote.
New Jersey Senator Robert Menendez from an interview we recorded yesterday. The full interview will air in coming days. It's our 2006 election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Coming up in this series, as I said, tomorrow, issue 20, Whose Moral Values, with Maggie Gallagher and Barney Frank. Monday, issue 21, Is Universal Health Care Possible in America? We continue now with issue 19, Will Your Vote Be Counted? We still have Michael Waldman, executive director of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, which has recently won lawsuits against Florida and Ohio over proposed changes in their voting laws. Waldman was an aide to President Clinton. Also joining us now, Robert Pollack, a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. Thanks for coming on, Robert. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Before the break, Michael Waldman was saying, not quite in so many words, and our other guest, a pastor from a low-income, mostly African-American neighborhood of Cleveland, was saying a little more explicitly that he thinks vote suppression is a Republican strategy these days, much more than any kind of voter fraud or intimidation the Democrats may practice. Do you disagree?
I mean, I'd just like to know what evidence they're offering for that claim.
Michael, do you want to jump in on that?
Well, again, I do want to make it clear that I didn't say that, as you said, but that the consequence of the there's always been some fraud in elections, and we all want to make sure that it doesn't happen. But the consequence of the way states especially are changing their laws and changing their systems tends very much to disenfranchise people who have less money, people who often are people of color, the people who've had the hardest time being a part of the democracy to begin with. The kinds of voter ID requirements, for example, that are being passed and imposed in many states simply are things that a lot of people don't have. When Arizona passed a recent requirement that there be proof of citizenship for voters, 17% of the people who showed up to register to vote in the biggest county there were turned away. And these were people who are eligible to vote mostly. It's affecting real people, and they're having real difficulty getting to vote. And the consequence is that it tends to be the people who are shut out to begin with.
Robert, I'll give you another one from a website, since you're looking for the evidence to refute, the claims of evidence to refute. Here's a quote from an article this month on the website Black Voice News Online. And it refers to, quote, so-called caging lists and other confidential data surrounding an October 2004 campaign directed by GOP party chiefs, which sought to challenge the ballots of tens of thousands of voters in the last presidential election. The spreadsheets indicate most of the letters were sent to African-American majority zip codes. So there are a few things. You want to address it?
Well, yeah, I think there's a clear bipartisan consensus in favor of having voter ID laws. You find 80% in poll after poll supporting it. You have the bipartisan Carter-Baker Commission, which recommended having voter ID. And you have the fact that, you know, in many, many other countries around the world, you have voter ID. You have it in Mexico, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Poland, Britain, India, South Africa. I mean, look, who are the South Africans trying to suppress by having voter ID?
You know, the question is not whether there should be voter ID, but whether the kinds of laws that are being passed now require ID that lots of people just don't have. We in this country don't have a national ID card because we don't have health insurance, national health insurance, the way all those other countries just about have. In Iraq, people dip their finger in purple ink, and that counts as a way of avoiding fraud. The bottom line is, when you have ID requirements that basically force people to show up with either a passport or a birth certificate to register to vote or to vote, there's just lots of people who don't have those things. Only 27% of Americans have a passport. So,
the latest proposal that went through the House of Representatives, was that there be a national law on voter ID, but that the federal government would fund anybody who couldn't afford it would get federal funding to have one. Is that unreasonable?
It is utterly implausible. And it was hardly bipartisan when it was passed in the House that
no.
The federal government would effectively fund that sort of thing. The bottom line is, the question that I have is, if we're really looking for fraud, and certainly no one wants fraud in an election, the possibility of an individual coming in and doing something that's already illegal, which is to vote illegally or vote twice, which already has high penalties, and you have to really support a candidate to risk going to jail to vote for them twice or even three times, pales next to something where we at the Brennan Center have worked very well with both parties, which is the potential threat of fraud from electronic voting systems. And if we're looking for fraud, if we're looking to stop fraud, it's not the real danger is the kind of electronic ballot box stuffing that is a real risk.
Well, absolutely. You know, I share your concern about the voting systems. Frankly, I think paper is the oldest but the best technology. And, you know, look, my ideal voting system would be paper ballots, voter ID. And another thing I think we have to address is the absentee voting system, which is very easily abused. And I think it should be much harder to get absentee ballots. We should have a real national election day where everyone turns out to vote on the same information.
Robert Pollack from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, Michael Waldman from the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, my guest on WNYC, as we ask, will your vote be counted in this year's elections? I want you to talk a little bit more about voting machines, each of you. Robert, the front page of the New York Times today has a story that begins with electronic voting machines for the visually impaired, equipped with audio, delivered to Yolo County, California, but some of them only spoke Vietnamese. And then it goes on to a litany of other bugs and doubts about the new voter technology. How much is technology now an enabler or a barrier, in your opinion, even since 2000, to more accurate vote counting?
It's hard to say how much it is, you know, for real. But look, the problem here is you have to have a system that not only is accurate, but that is also perceived to be accurate and tamper-proof. And I think, you know, people who have suspicions that electronic voting machines can be tampered with, well, I'm not enough of an expert to know about that. But it's obvious that computers can, with some degree of expertise, be hacked. And look, if people are going to have the most confidence in a simple paper ballot system, you know, where there's a clear record and that can't be tampered with in such a way, I think that's the way to go.
We'll take some phone calls here on this at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Michael, if you and Robert Pollack from the Wall Street Journal editorial board agree that paper ballots are the purest system, why is everybody going to electronic voting?
Well, part of it is a reaction to Florida. Nobody wants hanging chads ever to enter our consciousness ever again. And done right, electronic voting systems can be a real improvement because they can capture, if there are safeguards, they can capture people's votes and make sure votes get counted. The problem is you've got a few systems. They've been put in place all across the country. And as you say, there's tremendous worries that people have. It's tended to be partisan or conspiracy thinking. And what we did in the last year was we convened a task force of top computer scientists, including President George W. Bush's cybersecurity czar, people from within the government and outside. We looked at the three systems that are now going to be used in 80% of voting and found they are eminently hackable. You could walk in with a Palm Pilot and steal a Senate election. Mm. And there are fairly simple fixes that could be done, requiring paper records, but also requiring auditing of the paper records at the voting place to make sure that they match the totals. Mm-hmm. And these local election boards are overwhelmed. They don't know what to do. They don't have the technical expertise. I always use the analogy, you know, I turn on my computer in the morning and there's a little message from Microsoft saying, you have a security flaw. Do you want to fix it? You know, click yes. And I do click yes, but I have no idea what I've just done. These local officials, we're telling them, hey, buy these machines. By the way, you have a security flaw. You fix it. And it's going to be a big mess, not only that they don't work, which is what a lot of the article was in the Times today, but that we're not going to have confidence in the results.
You know what you've done when you send the error message.
Right,
you just
exactly.
Give Microsoft your cookie, that's all. Judy and Nanuet, you're on WNYC. Hello, Judy.
Hi. Thank you so much for your wonderful program. I think it's always phenomenal.
Thank you.
Such an important issue. Yeah, sure. My question is a simple question, but I don't know if the answer is simple. And that is, what can an individual voter do in the short term leading up to and including this upcoming election to try to help make sure that there is a minimum of voter fraud? And if you could include in your answer, particularly, is there anything that you can do in terms of these electronic voting machines?
Robert Pollack, how would you answer, Judy? What can an individual do?
I don't know what you can do in the short term. Again, I would urge people to support voter ID. That's, polls show the broad bipartisan support. No, the vote in the House of Representatives was not bipartisan. It was very partisan. But the polls consistently show 80% support for voter ID. That goes across racial lines. It goes across party lines. I think something like 67% of Kerry voters last time supported voter ID. You know, I think the integrity of the process is important. And again, another thing, I don't think we can do anything about it for this cycle. But again, you've got absentee balloting. I think people in this area might remember the allegations in the last election cycle that operatives for Rush Holt were going into insane asylums and giving people absentee ballots and asking them to vote. I mean, that's the kind of shenanigans that go on when you have people casting ballots en masse at places other than polling stations. It has to be stopped.
Michael Waldman, on voter ID, you know, here in New York, you just sign your name and they look to see if your signature matches. And to tell you the truth, the last time I went to vote, my signature, for whatever reason, didn't look like that much like the one, you know, in the book. And they said, well, it doesn't really look like your signature. I said, oh, it's really me. And they said, okay, go ahead. Is that good enough?
Well, you know, it's worked. It's like the machines in New York. They're a little clunky and old-fashioned, but they work better than most other things. If you really wanted to make sure that that people were who they said they were, there are things like signatures, photos. There's just all kinds of things you could do. The question is not, should people be who they say they are? The question is the specific laws that are being passed that require forms of ID that lots of people just don't have in America.
The question is, are we going to do anything at all to check if people are who they say they are? And it seems to me that right now the Democratic position is no. And anyone who suggests that we do something, they say, well, that raises the specter of the poll tax. I mean, look, that's silly.
It's not only not silly. The types of IDs that are passed, ranging from driver's license to passports to proof of citizenship, if you don't have these things, they cost between $20 and up to $200.
The latest
and the poll to wait a minute. Let me finish.
One at a time, guys. Michael, go ahead.
This is polite public radio here. We're not on not on Fox. The poll tax, when it was declared unconstitutional in 1966, adjusted for inflation today, was $8.97. So it's just not true that there isn't a different impact on different people. If we really want to make sure that people are who they say they are, there are lots of ways to do it that don't exclude people from democracy. And again, I go back to the bigger fraud concern, really, to me, has to do with these new electronic systems, where I think that the potential, you know, the best way to have electoral fraud has always been stuffing a ballot box, and now there's a way to do it secretly.
Go ahead, Robert.
So I would propose, why doesn't the country come to a compromise? You have a lot of people on the left concerned about electronic voting machines. People on the right will agree to address those concerns. People on the right are concerned about people showing up at the polling places not being who they say they are. Why don't people on the left agree to address that concern, and we can come to a broad national consensus?
You know, there's ways to come. I'm always interested in talking about ways to make sure that people are who they say they are and that there's not fraud. The problem is that these particular voter ID proposals that are out there, the first step is to stop them. Then we can have a conversation about how to make sure that everybody gets to vote, how many eligible people should be voting, and things like that. It is a long-term goal.
Well, let's address this particular one that was just passed by the House of Representatives, which would fund people who didn't have the money to get their ID. What's wrong with that?
Among other things, we don't say to people, you have a right to vote. You are a citizen. This is a privilege of being an American. And by the way, we're going to throw obstacles in your way. And if we don't worry, the federal government in 2006 will fund it. Even though it hasn't funded a lot of other things, don't worry, it'll really fund this. I wouldn't take that check to the bank.
It's our 2006 election series, 30 issues in 30 days, issue 19, Will Your Vote Be Counted?, with Michael Waldman from the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU and Robert Pollack from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and Derek in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Derek.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
The issue that I want to bring to your attention is there was an article in the Daily News about 2 years ago, saying that it had been uncovered that 15,000 New York voters had double voted in Florida during the presidential election that led to the issues down there in the Florida presidential. It was a single article, and I expected a lot of follow up. You know, people being prosecuted, fined, jailed, or whatever. Nothing ever. I looked for it. I couldn't find anything in the Times.
So it's a particular kind of voter fraud, double voting in New York and Florida by people who are maybe snowbirds and spend the winter down there. Are you familiar with this, Michael?
I'm not familiar with the particular thing that the caller is talking about. It would seem to me that that's illegal now and that the voter ID requirements wouldn't necessarily make it harder to do. We have these – right now we've got the system where it is state-by-state voter lists, and I can't imagine a way to stop that other than a national list, and I don't know too many people who would want that.
So let's see, Robert. I guess you'd vote in Brooklyn at 6 a.m., then take the 8:30 flight to West Palm. You ever hear of that issue?
Yeah, I heard that story. Everyone knows that voter rolls around the country are a mess, and that's another thing. That's another, cleaning them up has to be a big priority if we want to ensure is that the elections have integrity. I mean, if you look at big cities like Philadelphia, where you have, as many or more registered voters as you have adults, it's just obvious that there's a problem.
Elaine and Helmeta, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Elaine.
Hi. I'm 77 years old. I live in New Jersey, but I was born and married in Massachusetts. Because of this stupid and un-American law requiring voter ID, and because New Jersey has incorporated that into its driver's license recommendation, to renew my license this year, I have to get a certified copy of my birth certificate and my wedding certificate. And it cost me $96. Now, that is just an outrage. I mean, what do poor people do?
Robert Pollack, you heard Elaine's story. Is that not the kind of barrier that Michael Waldman has been concerned about?
Well, look, the figures show that about 90% of Americans already have the ID that would be needed.
That is wrong.
Of course it's correct that about 90% already have the ID. And the proposals on the table are to give federal funding to those who need help to get it.
If you think about it, what you're saying is you're proposing something where 10% of the public doesn't have the form of identification it needs to register to vote.
And
so to me, that's game, set, and match. But the second thing is, as we saw in Katrina, everyone was surprised, well, why didn't those people just drive away? Well, they didn't have cars. Well, people without cars often don't have driver's licenses. We just need to understand that many of our colleagues, many of our fellow citizens don't have access to the paperwork.
Mexico has voter ID, for crying out loud.
We have 1 minute left, and we heard the clip earlier of Senator Menendez talking about getting ready for election monitoring in New Jersey. 30 seconds each. What will you each be looking for on November 7th? Michael.
Well, one of the issues that we just talked about, there are all kinds of problems with how voter lists are made up. People who have different maiden names from married names, hundreds of thousands of them, may show up on election day and discover that they're not eligible to vote. There's a lot of states where there are still problems. We are working with secretaries of state of both parties to try to fix this. That is a silent disenfranchisement that could turn the results of elections.
Is New Jersey a special watch state for any reason?
New Jersey has problems with the databases, and New Jersey has problems because there are purges going on of voters. You have to have purges to make sure that, the cemeteries of Chicago don't vote, but they're done in secret. Nobody knows how they're done, who's thrown off, or what the reasons are.
Robert, 30 seconds, the last word.
Implement the recommendations of the bipartisan Baker-Carter Commission, which include voter ID. Let's do our best to move towards a system that, if it doesn't rely on paper ballots, at least has a paper trail. And let's try to move towards a system where more people actually vote on election day to limit the abuse of absentee ballots. I think that those are the three most important things we can do to ensure an election process with integrity.
Robert Pollack is a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. Michael Waldman is executive director of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU and a former speechwriter for President Clinton. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's 30 Issues in 30 Days for today. Let other media wallow in the polls and the attack ads. We've got issues, and we know you do too. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.